Today is March 25th, 2016, in Los Angeles. And we're going to be, Nudwarka, we're going to be looking at the rest of Manushiksha, verses 7 through 12. And it looks like a number of you were not here yesterday. I wanted to do just, and those of you who were yesterday and sort of begin today, thank you. I know most of the community went out on Harinam tonight, which is probably where you should be instead of here. But I wanted to just really, really briefly go through a review of what we did yesterday. So, Srimad Manushiksha was written by Raghunath Das Goswami. And it was written under the auspices. It was written under the auspices of Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Jaivadharma, taught the external path of spontaneous love to Bhikeshwara Pandit and the internal path to Raghunath Das Goswami. And one of the things we noted in Manushiksha is that Raghunath Das Goswami's path is very much in line with how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada taught us to attain Vrindavan. And this book basically answers the controversy between the Radhakund Babaji's and others as to whether or not Bhaktisiddhanta was teaching something that was bona fide. And we brought some books with us. Unfortunately, they all sold out yesterday. So you can talk to Chaturka Saki Devi Dasi about ordering some more books, and she's hoping to get in a large shipment soon. They should also be available on Amazon in a week or so. So we looked yesterday at the first three verses of Manushiksha, which tell us the basic qualification for attaining Krishna Bhakti. And there, Raghunath Das Goswami talked about having unprecedented love for Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, for the holy place itself, for the devotees who mentally live in Vrindavan, for devotees of any group who don't live in Vrindavan mentally, and even for priests who teach pious life, to love the, our Diksha mantras, our guru as a friend, not just as a saint, the holy name, and to always have an attitude of humility, to give up pride. And then we looked at our next verse, which was to always see Lord Chaitanya as Krishna and to see the Guru as the best friend of the Lord and to be free of wanting to enjoy the world either in a sinful or a pious way. Then in the third verse, sometimes this works well, and sometimes it doesn't. So in the third verse, we looked at the fact that we should be following Rupa and Sanatana if we want to attain to Vraj Bhakti, that they're the ones who are giving the guide, the guidance for how to do so. And again, we talked about how Swarup Damodar has taught this process to Bhikeshwara Pandit and Raghunath Das Goswami. We talked a little bit about the Gaudiya logo. I didn't show the slide yesterday. And how Bhaktisiddhanta was teaching the path of loving Krishna through come on, behave properly. Behave. Come on. I don't know why it's not behaving, and it's really bothering me that it's not behaving. Okay, sorry. Sometimes technology works, and sometimes it doesn't. So, okay, there we are. So this, we talked about the third verse, where Raghunath Das Goswami says, Swaragam, that one should develop one's attachment to Krishna, and gradually awaken in one of the five rasas. And then he says, all right, well, you're on this path of devotion, but then there's going to be some problems. And we looked at the first problem, which is what we talk about. Right? We love to talk about how if we talk about mundane things, it's like a prostitute who looks attractive and promises love, but somebody steals our wealth. And if we talk about liberation, then it's like being eaten by a tiger. It's like a prisoner who wants to commit suicide. And therefore, we should give up attachment for both material enjoyment and liberation. And even give up attachment for attaining to Vaikuntha and wanting to enjoy the Lord's opulences, but rather like the gopis, to be attached to Krishna in his form of Vrindavan, and then we get the jewel of Radha Krishna's love. In fact, the way that we give up attachment to materialistic talk is by this attachment to Radha Krishna's love. And these are all paintings that were made for the book. And then we talked about, okay, well, maybe we do talk about Krishna, but perhaps we don't really act the way that we talk. Maybe instead we're being captured by the thieves of lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and madness, who have formed ropes of wicked deeds and bound us by the neck. And this is, of course, the problem of hypocrisy, that we may talk about Krishna, but actually we may be pulled around at the same time by sinful deeds. And we are advised to cry out for help to the servants of the killer of Baka. Baka is a crane who represents hypocrisy. He's meditating like a yogi, but when he sees a fish, he goes for the fish, and then goes back to his meditative posture. Just by calling for the help of the servants of Baka's killer, those devotees who are free from hypocrisy, they can break these bad habits that we have in spite of talking about Krishna. So through their association and through the books. So at this point in Manashiksha, a person has attachment for Krishna in Vrindavan, attachment and love for the holy name, for the Diksha mantras, for their gurus and teachers, for the sacred places. They have a humble and open heart. They're trying to follow the great saintly persons. They don't talk about mundane things or liberation. And they're not doing anything sinful. So here's a person, they're now walking their talk. They're speaking about spiritual things, and they're doing spiritual things. But now we have a deeper, more subtle problem. And we're noticing here that Raghunatha Das Goswami talks about this in metaphors, right? He talks about that mundane talks are like a prostitute, talks of liberation are like a tigress, right? Our nasty activities motivated by lust, anger, envy, greed are like the robes pulling us around the neck. So now he's going to go to another analogy. So here is our verse, and because Raghunatha Das Goswami has given a benediction that anyone who sweetly sings these verses will attain love for Radha Krishna and Vrindavan. So I'd like us to sing these verses together. This is in the same tune as the Jagannath Astakam, except you can't change it for the last line. For the last line, you have to keep the same tune. So I'd like us to, I hope that was not too fast of a review. That was a review in 7 minutes of 2 hours yesterday. So I do apologize for those of you who are like, whoop, that went by way too fast. So I'd like us to sing this together, verse of Sanskrit, and then we can say the English together. All right, everybody ready? Are cheta prodya ka pata kudina divarakara sharam chesatva dasi katam atmanam apimam sarajam ganda vadi dara para prema vilasat suram bodhav sattvatam apinitaram ameva sukhaya. Why do you burn yourself and me, the soul, by bathing in the chirping urine of the great donkey of full-blown hypocrisy and duplicity? Instead, you should always bathe in the ocean of love emanating from the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gandharva Giddhikari, thereby delighting yourself and me. So at this point, the spiritual practitioner has started to awaken to their real self, and in order to give up talks of material enjoyment and liberation, has gotten this jewel of the love for Radha Krishna. Everybody's got that now? Now this jewel, and they in humility called out for the help of the devotees of Krishna, who killed hypocrisy in the form of a crane. So their ropes are cut, they're not dragged around by sinful activities anymore. But there's a deeper problem. And this is a very subtle problem. So they're talking about Krishna, they're acting for Krishna, talking about spiritual life, and they're acting in spiritual life. They're walking their talk. But where are you next? You know, just having a jewel of love of God isn't enough. A jewel is localized, yes? External and localized. It's in one place. So now the ones had these ropes cut of wicked deeds. The spiritual practitioner is going to feel, you know, I don't just want a jewel of love of God. I want to be swimming. I need to get clean. And we often feel that way in spiritual life. I need to be cleansed of my material desires, my material contaminations. But they can be a problem. If we sort of want to get clean, but we sort of don't want to get clean. Because being free of our material designations and contaminations means giving up certain conceptions, certain ways of thinking, certain ways of self-identification, to which we become very attached. And which we think is me. They're called upadis, or designations. I'm this kind of person, that kind of person, based on my body, based on my country, based on my race, my gender, etc. And we think this is me. We don't want to give it up. So we want to take it back, but we sort of don't. So such persons who are in the Gospel Swami say, I have a problem. These are the enemies. They've been killed now. You see all the lust, greed, envy, illusion, madness? They're dead. They're destroyed. The devotees free from hypocrisy, they've destroyed that in our lives. We're not pulled around by those anymore, doing grossly wicked deeds. But then, instead of jumping into the ocean of love of God, we decide instead, oh look, there's a place to bathe over there. And we don't notice that the place that we seek to bathe in is a donkey urinating. Looks like a bath. Think it's going to be a bath. But the effect of donkey urine, it's burning, it's acidic. At least that's what I've heard. I haven't tried it myself. So Rana Thesko Swami says, if you bathe in donkey urine, you simply burn. You simply burn. So what does this mean exactly? And in the commentary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he talks about three kinds of spiritual practitioners and some of the ways they can be bathing in donkey urine instead of the ocean of love. Now, I want to ask you all to see if you can find some common theme in all of these. Please remember that this is a person who's now, they've given up materialistic talking and listening, and they've given up gross materialistic activities. So see if you can find some theme, some running commonality. So this is the first kind of practitioner that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, the Swanista Sadhaka. So these people are generally married. Of course, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, people followed the system of ashram. And the system of ashram meant that either you were a renounced person or you were married. So as a young person in school, you were celibate, you were just in your studies. Then at a young age, people got married, and in middle age and old age, they became renounced. So there wasn't, in Bhaktivinoda's time, there were not people who were unmarried and unrenounced. It's, you know, on the fringes of society, but not as the main part of society. It just didn't exist. I mean, frankly, if you even go back to, say, the 1940s or 1950s in this country, that was also very unusual. So just keep that in mind in these three categories of practitioners. Bhaktivinoda was writing this 100 years ago, and he was writing it according to his society. So if some of you here are neither renounced nor married, you're going to have to figure out kind of, you probably fit in one of the married categories as far as mentality. So these are people who are, they have a family, have a home, but they don't have a regular job in the world. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, they don't engage in varnashram. Varna is your occupation. They don't have a job. They don't have a business. They're not making money in the world. Although they're married, they have a family, they have their own house, Still, they're only engaged in the processes of bhakti. And we have many such persons in our Hare Krishna movement. So we kind of depicted this symbolically, that Radha and Krishna are directly supplying everything that they need. So these people, they're not, you know, they're not being teachers, they're not running a government or being a landlord, they're not growing food or doing business, nor are they engaged in any of the arts. So they don't have any of those major categories of occupation. Okay, so got this kind of person? They're not a renounced person. They're not a renounced person, but they're just doing bhakti. And again, I would assume that this category would also apply to single people, who they may not have a family, but they're not really a renounced person. They have their own apartment, and they have their own house, and they have their own stuff. Right? Does that make sense, everybody? Okay, so these are all the different ways, and I don't think this is comprehensive, but these are the different ways Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that such a person can be bathing in donkey urine. First, pretending I'm offering food to the Lord, I'm sanctifying my food, but all I really want to do is eat nice things. Okay, remember, donkey urine looks like a bath. Right? Looks like a bath. I mean, the thieves with the rope around your neck, that's pretty obvious, right? You know you're doing sinful activities. You're talking about nonsense, you know that is pretty obvious. With the donkey urine, it's not, is it? You think, I'm offering this food to the Lord, I'm sanctifying my life, but actually all you're thinking about is animal eating. Looks like a bath, but it burns. Being more interested in serving materialistic people than in serving humble, saintly persons. And we sometimes see this. Sometimes we see it even in whole temple communities. That, you know, if someone's rich or famous, oh yes, come in, here's a nice seat, here's a garment, here's Mahaprasadam. And some humble, saintly person comes and they're ignored. I actually had an experience one time that my mother had given me some money and I was trying to think of what should I give it to. So I thought of one project in the Hare Krishna movement that I wanted to give it to. And it was in India where the money goes a lot further, right? It wasn't that much money, but for them in India it seemed like a lot of money. Right? So I gave it to this project in India. And the next time I visited there, they treated me like a super, you know, VIP. They greeted me at the gate with garlands and sweets and this and that. And I said, I'm not a rich person. That was a one-time thing. And they still went on and on, but I noticed the next time I visited, they ignored me. And when I had visited previous to that, I was worse than ignored, let's just leave it. I was actually mistreated. And so, you know, it seems like, oh yes, yes, we're flattering these materialistic people so we can use their money and their fame and their connections in service. Looks like a bath, but it just burns. So here's another way that the Swanista Sadhaka can be bathing in donkey urine, wanting to accumulate a lot of wealth and opulence. So again, these are not renounced people, but still wanting to get a lot more, and this idea reminds us of Rupa Goswami's Acharya principle. Just collecting more than what you need. Who's that Philippine president's wife who had, you know, 1,500, Imelda Marcos? And she had like over 1,500 pairs of shoes, something like that. So most of us aren't going to collect 1,500 pairs of shoes. But this kind of thing, more than what you need, more than what you need, more than what you need, more than. And this becomes one's obsession. So apparently you're serving Krishna, you're talking about Krishna, you're not doing anything grossly sinful, but one's consciousness is on, oh, and I need this, and I need this, and I need this, and I need this, and I need a better car, and I need a better flat-screen TV, and I need this. Bigger, better, bigger, better, bigger, better. Oh yes, I'm serving Krishna, but my consciousness is really bathing in donkey urine. And big donkey urine. Raghunath Das Goswami says it's a large donkey. So here's another way these kind of practitioners, right? Instead of spiritual understanding, they're interested in twisted logic. Now, we use logic in spiritual realization. Krishna Das Kaviraj says, if you like logic, apply it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we've also seen this sort of phenomenon where people, in the name of spiritual life, just want to argue. Have you ever seen this? We're doing it for Krishna, we're doing it for Krishna, and all they're doing is arguing, and they're not even arguing often very well. And they're much more interested in their arguments and in winning their arguments than they are in really delving into spiritual life. In fact, many times they even use scripture as their weapons. Right? You ever seen this? I'm going to take this scriptural quote to prove I'm right. Oh, I got this scriptural quote. I'm going to prove I'm right. And often you see more fighting within a spiritual community. Right? Instead of the spiritual community trying to help relieve materialism, all they're doing is fighting with each other. But it's in the name of spiritual life, and it's all about, this is about the truth. So they think they're getting a bath, but they're really bathing in donkey urine. And such a person may think, I'm not getting enough respect in my present situation. I should dress up like a renunciate so people will respect me more. I should really pretend to be a renunciate. And this way, you know, I'll get more respect for my preaching. So this is also donkey urine. So these are the ways in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one who is just depending on the Lord for their maintenance but is not a renunciate can end up bathing in donkey urine. Okay, now he gives us another category. Here he gives us a category which would apply to most of the people in the world, more or less, that of family persons, or we have to say in the modern day would also apply to many single persons, who have a regular job and a career. People who are maintaining themselves, they have a job, they have a business, you know, they go to work, they have some kind of regular income that's not just serving the Lord. Everybody understand what I mean? And so here we've shown this symbolically, and I hope this isn't too stereotypical, so please forgive me, but we show it symbolically, the man's coming home with a briefcase. Yes, it could be a woman coming home with a briefcase, please don't shoot me. But the man's coming home with the briefcase, and Radha Krishna are pouring everything into the briefcase. So the Lord is maintaining them through their work. You all follow that? And here we see in this picture that people are engaged in proper etiquette, the young respecting the old. We see the worship of the deity according to the rules, engaging in study, going to school. These are the normal activities of pious people. Okay, pious people. And they are devotees of the Lord. So how can these people be bathing in donkey urine? Okay, pretending to be very strict and privately being attached to all kinds of mundane things. So not gross sinful activities, but their real attachment is to something else. So they say, yes, 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 I am very strict. I am following all the rules. I am really pukka. But actually their heart is on mundane things. And here, very similar to those who flatter the materialists for money and so forth, this Parinista Sadaka, they just enjoy the company of materialists more than the company of devotees. They'd rather be with materialistic people, and we've represented these here as what we call in Sanskrit the Karmita Gyani and the Yogi. And you see the devotee is kind of walking away, doesn't really belong there. So, you know, if they have some time, they have, well, I'd rather hang out with materialistic people. I feel more comfortable with them. So those are the two ways Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives. Then the third category of spiritual practitioner are the renunciates, the priests, the monks, the nuns, and represented here the sannyasi, the brahmachari, and the renounced woman. So these are persons who are living without having some work in the world, without having a family, celibate in very simple situations. Now, how can these people be bathing in this burning donkey urine? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if they think, I am a very advanced spiritualist, just see how renounced I am. Everybody is respecting me. And they think, oh, I'm getting so clean here. Right? I'm getting so clean. But as soon as they have that thought, they're maybe in donkey ear. And if they think, well, because I'm so superior to others because of my renunciation and my dedication, please, again, keep in mind, these are actually externally very dedicated people. These people have conquered, again, they've conquered materialistic talk, talks of liberation, they've conquered the gross sinful activities, lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, madness, have been destroyed. They have a jewel of love for Krishna. They've started to awaken to their relationship with Krishna. These are not ordinary people. This is deep stuff. But they may think, oh, I'm so much better than everyone. I don't have to respect you. I don't have to respect you. You're just my servant. And Prabhupada said that we should see everyone as worthy of our service. Not only all the devotees, but all living entities as worthy of our service. But this person thinks, oh, I am worthy to be served. But if they're thinking, oh, by serving me, they'll make so much advancement because I'm so advanced. It's good for other people to serve me. It will be benefit for them to serve me. And they think it's very spiritual, but it's donkey ear. And just like the family person who is more attached to collecting, the renunciate who's attached to collecting. Where is my money? Where is my donations? Where is my clothing? Where is my food? Oh, I'm collecting alms. How much alms did I collect today? Maybe I'll go there and collect some more over there. Oh, it's for Krishna. It's for my spiritual life. But how much have I collected for me? Can I buy the new coat I wanted? This very common one in the name of preaching, just trying to attract the opposite sex. Wanting the adulation of the opposite. Oh, I'm a great preacher. This happens in all religious traditions, doesn't it? In the name of preaching, I get a following of subtle sexual adoration, which we have to say sometimes turns into not so subtle. So this is donkey ear. And neglecting one's worship. Here we see the worship is neglected, everything's falling apart. Neglecting one's worship, going to materialistic people for wealth. And I think we've all seen this. You know, well, I have to collect more money for this project and that project and this project. I don't have time for my meditation. I don't have time for my chanting. I don't have time for my spiritual study. I've got to go collect. So neglecting one's own spiritual study for materialistic persons, hoping that I'll get wealth. And being anxious for wealth, envying materialistic persons and thinking, oh, am I going to get enough money? Am I going to get enough this? Am I going to get enough that? Is Krishna going to take care of me? More concerned with the external clothing and external rules than devotion for Krishna. So we're showing this again. He's neglecting his deities and his study and his meditation. And he's just thinking of getting the rituals right. So this is also very common, and it looks very spiritual, doesn't it? I have all the rituals right, I folded my dhoti or sari just so, and I have the perfect tilak, and I say all the mantras exactly, perfectly. Oh, where's your devotion? My devotion? Can't you see my devotion? Every hair is in the right place. And the most subtle one, I'm not sure how well you can see this, but you see how their hearts are locked up in a box? Do you see the box?
Yes.
With the hearts in it? We're really struggling how to portray this in a picture. Right? So externally, yes, yes, jai, jai, and they're doing kirtan, and they're doing everything, but their hearts aren't there. So Raghunathas Goswami says, instead we should bathe in an ocean of love. So I wanted to ask all of you, what was the recurring theme in all of these ways that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives that one can be bathing in donkey urine? Yes?
I think in all three situations, they're trying to impress people in their class. Mm. And in Buddhism, we call it spiritual materialism.
Spiritual materialism. Oh, that is, I like that. I'm stealing that. Impressing people in their class, and you're going to see how right that is when we go to the next verse. Thank you. Some other common thread of all of these ways of bathing in donkey urine. Yes?
It's really self-deception.
Definitely self-deception. Yes?
Hypocrisy.
Definitely hypocrisy. Now, it's not gross hypocrisy. The gross hypocrisy was with Bakasura, where one talks about Krishna and then is secretly going to the movies or hanging out, you know, doing all kinds of gross things. This wasn't gross. It's what kind of hypocrisy? It's very subtle hypocrisy. Yes?
I think what I'm basically, people like know all these facts, like you know, materialism is bad and everything. But when they get into the cave, they say, in this room, you know, I can connect to this thing. Once I get into my cave, I will behave mindlessly.
Ah.
So, like, once I get into my cave, no one is seeing, like, whatever it is, it's my own cave. And I kind of, I'll be a different person.
I'll be a different person. So, what you're saying, just repeating for the people on the internet, because they're not passing on the microphone. So you're saying that they know they can talk a lot about the difficulties of materialism, and when they're here in the temple, they behave nicely, but in their own cave, they behave differently. That also applies a little bit more to the ropes around the neck people. So the ropes around the neck people, with dragged by lust, anger, envy, greed, they're really more in that category, that they're behaving nicely when they're around the devotees, and when they're in private, they're doing all kinds of nonsense. Whereas these people being bathed by the donkey urine, they are not doing nonsense in private. They are free from gross nonsense activities, and they are serving Krishna publicly, privately, and talking about Krishna. So this is a, it's more subtle. Yes?
Also, it's the idea of going through the motions, but not really experiencing taste.
Yes, definitely going through the motions and not really experiencing a taste. Some other common thread. Yes?
They're getting the essence of
love
for Krishna.
They're not getting the essence of love for Krishna. Did you have something? Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's sahaja, right? It's to be devotional and mix the two.
It's interesting you use the word sahaja. Sahaja usually means someone who takes them very easy. And generally, the sahajas are people who don't do the externals properly and instead want to go right to the ecstasy. You know, they want the samadhi without going through all the steps to achieve it. So, whereas these people have their external rules, you know, often really down, they're not trying to go over the external rules. So it's a little different kind of cheating than sahajya per se. Although certainly some sahajyas may also be in this category. Yes?
Okay, I have a question. Because it seems like we're all in some category or another. Do we benefit from trying to...
Well, again, at this point in Manashiksha, especially for those of you who were yesterday, for this point in Manashiksha, these people are advanced devotees. The people at this point, compared to the most of the people on this planet, would be probably considered saints. They're on quite a high level. And they have, remember they already got this jewel of the love of Radha and Krishna. And that's how these people conquered worldly and liberation talks. And they're free from gross sinful activities. So they're pretty extraordinary. They're pretty far on the shining path of bhakti. Not ordinary persons at this point. Yes?
They're making progress in purifying their hearts.
They are making progress in purifying their hearts. However, they've really got to be careful they don't just stay in this donkey urine. They've got to go past this point. But yes, they've come quite far. Yes.
They are contaminators.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, is attachment to family member is a problem? Or let's say my kid is not making the good score. Let's say my kid got low grade. I kind of fear about their future and I kind of really. So is it?
Well, it's interesting you bring up that about being attached to your children and worrying about whether or not, I'm repeating it also for people who can't hear. They can only hear from my mic and they can't hear from you. If you're worried about, you know, is your kid going to get a good grade? So that would be the Parinista Sadaka. So the Parinista Sadaka, they're family persons. Again, in Bhakti Vinod Thakur's time, in our modern time, they might not be married. They have a job. They have children, their children are going to school, and that's part of their responsibility, is to make sure that their children do well in school, and to make that is part of their life. So that in and of itself is not any kind of a disqualification. The difficulty is when the person is, again, thinking they're taking a spiritual bath, but actually bathing in donkey urine. Just the fact that you have family responsibilities that you feel some responsibility for is not in and of itself any disqualification. Now, if you're afraid about your children's grades in school because you think, well, my children have to get grades, good grades in school so they can make a lot of money and enjoy the material world and be a big success, then you're way back to materialistic talk. Then you're back at verse 4 with the prostitute of materialistic talk. But if you're thinking, I want my children to get a good education and do well in school so they can have some foundation to live a decent life and serve the Lord, then that's depends what, you know, what you feel your motives are. Thank you for asking that. Any other idea about the common thread of this donkey urine? All these people were bathing in donkey urine. What are they doing? Yes? Still thinking of themselves and their spiritual practice. Definitely, we see that through all of them. Their focus is on themselves, not Krishna. Yes?
I have a quick question.
Yes?
Would this be like in a Narjuna Rinchi still? But you said that they have that jewel.
Oh, what a nice question. What a nice question. And you've come down to one of the main points here in Manashiksha that we can understand, which we write about in the book, which unfortunately we're all sold out of right now. What? Fortunately, we've all sold out. Well, unfortunately for everybody here. So many times people have the misconception that the awakening of spontaneous devotion for Krishna comes after all of the anartas are gone. So it's true that it comes after the gross anartas are gone, generally. Generally, you won't awaken spontaneous love for Krishna if you're still engaged in eating meat, fish and eggs, having illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. However, it's very clear that there's still these subtle anartas are there after the awakening. So in verse 3, Raghunath Das Goswami says, Sa Ragam, one has started to awaken one's feelings towards Krishna. One has started to awaken, oh, Krishna is my child, Krishna is my friend. And still there's this stuff going on. Which is very interesting. Let's not think about ourselves right now, but if we look at other devotees, and sometimes we see this funny mix of advancement and contamination in others. And that can be like that. And just like Haridas Thakur says, as soon as the sun starts to rise, everything gets lit up. But you know there's still stars in the sky? And you can't see the colors. So just because the sun has started to come over the horizon doesn't mean it's broad daylight yet. It's a gradual unfolding. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Any other thoughts on the common thread here? Yes?
As the different scenarios were going on, I was thinking, oh, I know somebody like that. I know somebody like that. That's so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but then sometimes these personalities are put into positions of great respect.
Yes.
So how do we still keep respect and not fault find?
Oh, good question. So she's asking that she recognizes people in these different categories and some of them get put in positions of power. How do we still respect them? I'm going to say again that people at this point are already quite spiritually advanced. These are not beginning spiritual practitioners at this point in Manushiksha. And their spiritual advancement is real. They have a real jewel of love for God that they're holding. So they're not ordinary persons. And, you know, Krishna sometimes puts people in position of authority because being in a position of authority sometimes is a fast route to purification. You're under the magnifying glass with the spotlight on you. Sometimes it really speeds things up. Also, sometimes that's what the person wants, and so Krishna is fulfilling their desire. They want some position. Yes?
Even spiritually advanced persons have a problem. You know, they have to still go through the karma.
Even, well, but this is not about prarabdha karma. So you said even spiritually advanced persons have to go through prarabdha karma. This is not really about prarabdha karma. This is really about something a little different. Yes?
So when we're around devotees, do we have to be more submissive around them?
Well, we should be, as you remember way back in verse 1, we're supposed to have loving attachment to the devotees who live in Vrindavan in their mind, to the devotees who are intermediate but don't live in Vrindavan in their mind, and to even the religious teachers who teach about pious life. We're supposed to have unprecedented love for all of them. And we're supposed to respect even ants. Okay, what I'm seeing in these, all of these ways of bathing in donkey urine, is they all look spiritual. They all look spiritual. I'm collecting money for service, I'm preaching, I'm so renounced. They all look spiritual. They don't look like materialistic activities externally. But what's wrong is the motive. What's wrong is what's driving the activity. What's driving the activity is money, possessions, impressing the opposite sex, power. That's what's driving it. And so the persons are deceiving themselves. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami says this donkey urine burns. And one way one can tell that one's in this position is especially one will feel a burning sensation whenever you meet someone who's actually more advanced. You feel a burning in your heart. Another thing that we can note about this burning is because people in this situation are not feeling much internal bliss. Occasionally, but not generally feeling internal spiritual bliss. Internally, what they're feeling is burning. And so people in this situation will sometimes try to get more and more into the externals as a way of convincing themselves that they're very spiritual. And Jiva Goswami talks about that a person will gauge their advancement by, you know, how many books they've sold, how many mantras they chant, how many times they've waved incense in front of the deities, how much money they've collected, how many temples they've built, and that becomes how they define their advancement. I was once visiting a temple that I hadn't been to before, and one of the devotees comes out to greet me, and he starts telling me his whole resume, his whole CV. You know, here I am the temple commander, and here I did this, and I was thinking, did I care? Did I ask? You know. Anyway, so I was listening to all of them. And then he turns to me and said, so what department are you in? I didn't quite know what to say. He said, I don't know, maybe the troublemaking department. But it was just interesting to me that he's giving me, you know, this is my accomplishment and my accomplishment and my accomplishment. And the longer that one is bathing in this donkey urine, the longer that one starts looking at spiritual life like that. Spiritual life becomes then very unsatisfying. Instead of soothing and cooling like the ocean of love, it's burning. And the person's thinking, why aren't I getting clean? I'm chanting, I'm reading, I'm preaching, I'm dedicating, I'm doing all the right things, and I'm just not getting clean. And sometimes these people may then blame the process, though the process doesn't work, and they give it up, and they write books about how it doesn't work. I've seen that. Or they blame people. Well, the main reason I'm not getting advanced is that temple president.
or my wife. I know people like that. Send me email after email. All the problem is my wife. Or my parents, you know, something. They blame others, and sometimes they'll write long papers criticizing others. And then they go on for years. This spiritual leader did this thing, and this spiritual leader did this thing, and this spirit, and that's why I am not blissful. Or sometimes they just accept that that's life, and they go on, maybe even living in a temple so they can get some free food and a place to stay if they just show up and burble their mantras. Well, not such a bad job. Just come burble my mantras and I'll get something to eat and a place to stay. And they just accept that this donkey urine is the bath. That's what there is. Maybe I'm going to earn my way to heaven. What is it? Thinking the holy name is a ritualistic activity. I'm putting in the time and counting the mantras and I'm going to earn my way to the top heaven, you know, somehow. So you can see here why that, yes?
I'm a bit confused, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure.
But this is the devotees who have Baba, right?
No, they're not Baba yet.
No.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to get there today, but we haven't got there yet.
So it's like Rati.
Rati is Baba. I would prefer not to try to equate the steps of Manashiksha with Shraddha Prema, because what I've seen is that the acharyas, in describing the steps of bhakti, they're looking through different lenses. So just, you know, if you're going to talk about a child becoming an adult, you can talk about them becoming an adult physically, socially, emotionally, intellectually. Those are different lenses. And they don't equate. So a physical maturity doesn't always equate to the same level of emotional or social maturity, right? So this is, Raghunathas Goswami is giving one way of explaining the path, which may be a little different lens from what Rupa Goswami is looking at in Shraddha Prema. So I caution against trying to make them all parallel to each other and trying to take the terms. If you're going to take the terms from social maturity and apply it to physical maturity, you may get confused. Is that
when
right?
When you mentioned that these devotees love Krishna, what do you mean by love?
They have some genuine affection and love for Krishna. There's even been some awakening of their rasa with Krishna, at least here in Manashiksha. There's something genuine. They have a jewel of love of God. It's something genuine. So what is the cure for this bathing in donkey urine? So we knew that the cure for the mundane talk and talks of liberation was to meditate on the jewel of love of God between Radha and Krishna. To feel that love between Radha and Krishna, to revere it, to meditate on it. And the cure for gross sinful activities was to cry for the help of devotees who are free from hypocrisy. So the cure here also involves some humility. Now, it's very embarrassing, we were talking about yesterday, it's embarrassing to say that I got this master named Greed who's dragging me around with a rope around my neck. Well, imagine how much more embarrassing it is to say that in the name of spiritual life, I'm actually bathing in donkey urine. So I think I'll tell you a personal story. So at one point I said to Krishna, Krishna, I'm really tired of purification through suffering. You know, we have this thing, this time, whenever anything bad happens to you, we say, well, that's purification, boo. So it's like, okay, do I always need that kind of purification? Can you give me purification through joy? Just try it once, Krishna, see if it works, you know, give me a try. I'm sure you've been trying it all along anyway. So I was invited to work on a project, a big project. And it was just the kind of work that I loved to do. It was exactly, perfectly my nature as if someone had custom designed this service to be exactly what I'm good at and exactly what I loved. It was just, I was full of energy every moment in working on it. Except for one thing. I could write around the project, but when I had to write about that project and glorify that project, I couldn't do it. I was blocked. And finally, I had written about everything else that I could do, and it was time to write on that. There was nothing else left to do, and no time left. And I just was blocked, I couldn't write on. And then I understood, you're envious of that project. And then I realized that for so many years I had thought, why are they giving all the money to that project? Why don't they give the money to my project? And I had thought that that was very spiritual. I mean, my project was real cool, and Prabhupada said it was the most important project in the Hare Krishna movement. So it should be most important to everybody. And why wasn't everybody giving all their time and energy and money to the project that Prabhupada said was the most important? And that I just happened to be working on it because, of course, I know it's the most important because I'm the most dedicated to the most important thing. And all these other people dedicated to something else that Prabhupada also said was important, but not the most important. Well, they're not possibly as good as what I'm doing, and so why are they giving anything to that? They should be giving everything to what I'm doing because I'm the best. And I looked at it and I saw that that's what it was. And I saw that something I had taken for years as dedication. For years. I'm so dedicated. I am so sincere. It was nothing but envy and pride. Nothing at all. And it was kind of interesting that Krishna did that in the context of a very enlivening and ecstatic service. And he did it very privately also, except now I'm telling all of you about it. So it also, if I hadn't told any of you, you would never know. It's all happening in here. So that's very embarrassing to see that in the name of service, I'm bathing in donkey urine. I was so humiliated, so ashamed. All these years, I thought this was a jewel I was putting in front of Srila Prabhupada. Here's my dedication to Gurukula. And he said, oh, really? And your dedication to Gurukula is at the cost of criticizing and envying anybody who's dedicated to anything else? Is it about my projects or you? So that takes some willingness to be authentic, and to say, what am I bathing in? Instead of just seemingly bathing, oh, this is so spiritual, or just kind of burning. But, you know, they said it would be kind of purifying, so I guess it's going to burn a little bit. It's all right. And I'm bathing. And look up, and what are you bathing in? There's a donkey's behind over there. A big donkey. Wow. So what's the cure? He says the cure is instead take a real bath. Bathe in the ocean of love at the feet of Gandharva and Giridhari. What is this love? This love is about service. It's about caring for the other. It's not selfish. It's about pleasing the Lord. So take a bath in there. And it's interesting, he calls Radharani Gandharva, the artistic singer. And we have in our art book a number of quotes about how Radharani plays the veena, and she's a very artistic singer. Radharani's singing can melt stone, like Krishna's flute playing. And she can melt stone. So she can melt our stone-like heart. And we get this desire, as she has, just to give pleasure to the Lord. That it's not about me, it's not about people respecting me, and me thinking that I'm great, and me accumulating stuff, and me impressing the opposite sex, or impressing anybody, or even trying to impress myself. It's really just about making Krishna happy. And Krishna is addressed as Giridhari, he who holds up a mountain. So even if all of our attachment and our burning is just like a mountain of difficulty, he can take care of it. It's easy for him. It may be very difficult for me to even see my ill motives. Getting rid of them is almost impossible. But if I get into this mood of the artistic singer and the mountain holder, what is their mood? What is their love? How do they deal with each other? How do they deal with their devotees? So loving, so giving, so serving. That is what really satisfies us. What really satisfies our heart is when we do things for others, even materially, isn't it a fact? You know? You cook for someone you love, isn't that more pleasurable than cooking for yourself? Isn't using your money to buy a gift for someone you love more pleasurable than using that money to give something for you? That's the ocean of love we should be bathing in. And if we're doing that, we'll see the donkey for what it is. And we won't even go there. We'll see, here's an ocean of love, and it's a donkey. Why would I want to go there? We'll become distasteful. We'll feel repulsed. Oh, I don't want to. Now, a person at this stage may sometimes think, well, I was preaching just to get money, so I'll stop preaching. Which is what Arjuna talked about in the Bhagavad Gita. Well, if I'm doing this just to get a kingdom, I'll just walk away from it. But no, the devotee needs to learn to do it for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. All right, we are almost at perfection. One more verse to go to get to perfection. So now, swimming in an ocean of love and service, holding a jewel of love. But that's all outside, isn't it? The ocean is still outside. We're swimming in the ocean of love, but it's still outside. And we're no longer doing service to get money. We're no longer doing service to attract the opposite sex. We're no longer meditating on how we're going to enjoy the world in the name of service. But we have something going on in the heart. This is the end. Okay, can we sing this together? Prati sasha drista swa pachara mani me vidinate katam sadhu premas pru sati sujireta nanumana sada tvam seva swa prabhudaita samantamatulam yatata nishasya tvaritami atam de. Altogether, as long as the unchaste dog-eating woman of desire for prestige dances in my heart, how can the chaste and pure lady of love for Krishna touch it? Therefore, O mind, you should always serve the incomparable, beloved, devoted commander of Krishna's army, who will immediately throw out the unchaste woman and establish the pure lady of love in my heart. Now, in some translations of Manushiksha, they call this woman a prostitute, but that's not the Sanskrit word. The Sanskrit word in verse 4 was actually a prostitute of mundane talks. But this says an unchaste woman, unclean, promiscuous woman. If any of you know Sanskrit, you may notice something interesting in the word prema. You notice it has a long A. It's not prema, it's prema. And that's because it is feminine. Sadhu prema is the chaste lady of love. So it's feminine. So you have two women basically involved here. You have an unchaste woman who's eating a dog and dancing in the heart. And then you have a chaste, pure lady of love. All right, so we're now swimming in the ocean of love. And it seems like there's a party going on in our heart. And the devotee at this point thinks, I'm swimming in the ocean of love. I have a jewel of love. And there's a party going on in my heart. But they don't look and see who's having a party. What's on the table? What's being served at this party is a dead dog. I didn't want to put any really gross pictures of actually dead dogs. A cartoon would do.
Thank you.
But, you know, a dead dog. So what's a dead dog? The dead dog is fame, honor, prestige. So a dead dog, there are people in the world who eat dogs, but is that a very nice food? Is dead dog a very nice food? Even most meat eaters would not consider dead dog a very nice food. You can eat it, I suppose. You could say, it's food, but it's not nice food. It's not nourishing. It's not healthy. So fame looks like something maybe edible, but it's, ugh. That's fame. Fame is like a dead dog. And the desire for fame is like a wild, disloyal woman. Promiscuous means you have no loyalty. One lover, another lover. So why is the desire for fame like a disloyal woman? When you want fame and honor, are you going to be loyal, or are you going to go to whoever gives you fame and honor? When you're loyal to someone, you know, they may honor you sometimes and not honor you other times, isn't it? Right? Any of us who've been in some long-term committed relationship, do you always get honored? And if you're going to say, well, I'm not being honored here, I'll go someplace else, then you don't really care about the person or the relationship, you just care about what you're getting. So therefore, she's unchaste, she's impure. But she's dancing, eating her dog. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his song commentary, says she has a lover named Deceit. So the donkey urine was all about deceit, wasn't it? Deceiving mostly yourself. Thinking I'm serving the Lord and doing something spiritual when you had different motives. And the robbers with the ropes around your neck, that was also about deceit. You're talking about spiritual things, but you're doing nonsense. Well, deceit's in love with this desire for fame. It's the desire for fame, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's at the root of all the deceit. Now think about it for a minute. How are we going to get fame and honor? Mostly by pretending to be something we're not, isn't it? If I'm really honest, would any of you honor me? No, you'd say, yeah. So we pretend. I'm great, I'm good at this, I know this. Right? Why? Why are we pretending so many things just to be respected? We don't have the confidence, we don't have the fearlessness that if I am authentically who I am, I won't need to be honored. Who I authentically am is a pure spirit soul. I'm glorious. I don't really need anything other than that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about these three classes of practitioners. The Swanista, the Parinista, the Nirapeksha. The householders who just do bhakti, the householders who have a job, and the renunciates. And he said all of them have to be careful of this desire to be honored. Now what does it mean, this desire to be honored? Do I want anybody else to be honored? No. I don't. So the cure Raghunath Das Goswami gives is he says, go to the generals. Here we have the Pandavas. They're planning their attack. Say, go to the generals. So to get rid of sinful activities, we could go to any devotee free from hypocrisy. But here we have to go to the generals in Krishna's army. Why? Because who's the most worthy of honor? The generals in Krishna's army. The top saintly persons. They are the most worthy of honor. And when we have this dancing, promiscuous woman eating dog meat in our heart with her lover deceit, dancing the night away, we don't want to honor the saintly persons. We're the saintly persons. Right? I just talk about Krishna. I just talk about spiritual things. I'm not even interested in liberation. I'm interested in enjoying the world. Don't do any sinful activities, just serving Krishna all the time. I'm not even serving Krishna for ulterior motives. At this point, I'm swimming. Ocean of love of God, holding the jewel of love of God. I am great. Please honor me as a saintly person. It's very interesting. There's a purport Prabhupada has in the Bhagavad Gita where he talks about how one can take birth again and again. And he says one can be, there's this whole list of things you can take birth in, and one of them is a saintly person. He said one will take birth as a saintly person or as a bug. And I'm like, what? Why would that be one of the lists of ways you can incarnate? But that's this problem. And this person is really saintly. They really are. This is very high. swimming in an ocean of love, holding a jewel of love. Not trying to gain wealth or subtle sex or material facility from their service. No sinful activities, no mundane talk, no talk of liberation, very high. And so the person thinks, yes, I am very high. And so those who are really high, they hate them. So the cure is, become a servant of those who are really high. Give honor, give service to those who are actually high. Give honor and give service to those who don't have some disloyal, dirty, dog-eating lady dancing in there. Serve them. And by serving them, they can send her out of the heart. The generals in Krishna's army, they can say, no, this heart is for Krishna. And this whole section reminds us a lot of the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees, they clean out the dirt. This is the second cleaning, the very fine Shishma, the very fine dirt. So hard to detect this woman in the heart because, again, the person at this point is very advanced, genuinely advanced, and it seems like there's a party going on. And without help from the generals in Krishna's army, this cannot be eradicated. Real service. Certain, and not just lip service, not just, you know, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. Jai Gurudev. My Gurudev shows up once a year, and that once a year I manage to show up at the temple and say, Jai, Jai Gurudev. You know, but really genuine, humble service. With the mood that this person is great. With a real mood of honoring that person. And as we give honor to those who are honorable, we feel so satisfied that we start to see how absurd it is that we're looking for honor. And then Krishna himself drives them out of the heart. Then the heart is clean, a beautiful place. And the Suchi Sadhu Prema enters now the celestial city of the heart. So this is the question. Do I want to serve and be honored, or do I want to serve? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some ways we can serve the generals in Krishna's army. He says, through the purifying embrace of the devotee, through taking the foot dust of a devotee, the food remnants of the devotee, this is a little child Narada, taking the food remnants of the devotee, the foot washing water of a great devotee, here's Krishna washing the feet of Sudama. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the spiritual potency will flow from the heart of that general in Krishna's army into our own heart. And the chaste ladies of love will then enter the heart. This description is given in Govinda Lilamrita, after Krishna and the gopis bathe in Radhakund. So then the gopis are getting dressed. And when the gopis are getting dressed, it's not like an ordinary woman who gets dressed just so that other people can be attracted to her and she can control them through lust. The gopis are getting dressed just so Krishna will be happy. In fact, sometimes they get so absorbed in making Krishna happy that they get dressed backwards. Right? They put their clothes on upside down and they put their belt on their head. And because they're not thinking about their own sense gratification. They're just thinking of how to make Krishna. So these chaste ladies of love enter our clean and purified heart, and they get us ready to receive what we are coming to in the next verse. So here we're at the final section of Manushiksha. The first section was introduction, qualification, setting our compass to the right direction. The middle section is dealing with all of the different obstacles on the way in metaphorical form, right? They're all given as metaphors. And now the devotee has crossed, and this would now be equivalent to that. The devotee has now crossed over into perfection. So if we can sing this together, everybody ready? Yata dushtavan mega vayati satasya pikripaya Yata mayam premam ritama pidara jitvalamasho Yata shri gandharvava janam vidaye peratimam Tata goste kakva giridharami atvam bhajamana. Altogether, even though I am a cheater, the Lord's mercy can drive away my inherent wicked nature. Give me the glowing nectar of divine love and inspire my heart with the process to worship Sri Gandharva. Therefore, O mind, with pleading words, you should worship Sri Giridhari here in Vrindavan. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments, if you can't find any generals in Krishna's army, you can always go to Govardhan himself. He's a general. But we see here, has a devotee any more desire for honor and prestige? It's done. I'm a cheater. I'm wicked. There's no more, I'm a saint person. I'm advanced. That's gone. I'm just a cheater and I'm wicked. But, although I'm wicked, and although I'm a cheater, you can do three things. What are the three things here? Give me the glowing nectar of divine love. Right? Drive away my wicked nature and inspire me to worship Gandharva. So drive away my wicked nature. I'm dirty, I'm fallen, I'm wretched, I'm a cheater, I'm nothing but a cheater. All of the service I've done for you has been motivated by wanting people to respect me as a saintly person, or motivated by wealth and sex and power, or secretly doing wicked deeds, or talking about nonsense. It's all been motivated, it's all dirty. I am a cheater, but I'm begging, and you can give me mercy. And the glowing nectar to drink. Ah, now we're finally internal. The ocean of love was external and pervasive. The jewel of love was external and localized. And now the glowing nectar is internal. Now that the heart is clean, the chaste ladies of love have come into the city of the clean heart, free from the desire for honor. And we're full now of humility. Now we're giving this glowing nectar that fills us completely with spiritual bliss. And here's Radha and Krishna pouring nectar into the hearts of the devotees. A very wonderful explanation here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the rays of the Ladini Shakti enter into the devotee's hearts, thus making visible the devotee's transcendental relationship with Krishna. So we had way back in verse 3, Swaragam, but the devotee had some awakening. Oh, I think I love Krishna as a friend. I think I love Krishna as a parent. But here, the rays from Krishna's pleasure potency go in the heart and light up the heart. And one now fully sees, not just a hint, not just the sun rising below the horizon, but the sun rising. And one here really starts to see, oh, this is my eternal form, my eternal name. This is my service to Krishna. Now self-realization becomes tangible. And Raghunath Das Goswami says, Krishna, please, you engage me in the worship of Gandharva. So our wonderful Krishna conscious philosophy is God as male and female, Radha and Krishna. And here Krishna is bringing the devotee to worship Radharani, to worship Gandharva. Now, Krishna is very pleased when his devotee is worshipping his devotee. And the way Bhakti Nara, again, these are all illustrations from our book. Bhaktivinoda Thakura speaks of different ways that one can worship the Ladini Shakti, who now enlightens and opens our heart. He has a prayer, O Devi Gandharva, falling on the ground like a rod, I, an extremely distressed soul, beg you to please count me as one of your near and dear ones. O Devi Gandharva, when will I dress you in cloud-colored sari? When will the servant be able to massage your feet? Now, just as the chaste ladies of love prepared the heart for receiving this lovely nectar at the service of Gandharva, the Ladini Shakti, so Bhaktivinoda Thakura says one must take shelter of the devotees of the devotees of the devotees. Not that now I've attained perfection, now all this serving the devotees of Bhakabhid and the general, that's all over now, I'm just going to go to Krishna. No. At this platform, one is also serving the devotees. Now, the way one serves Radha and Krishna is by serving the devotees of God. And now one's eternal form is starting to manifest. So it's very interesting, the way that one's eternal form manifests is one meditates on particular devotees. So here's the principle, by serving the devotees, one serves Radha Krishna. But because each of us awaken to a different relationship with Krishna, we're going to be particularly meditating on those devotees in our awakened state who are the epitome of that relationship. And in fact, such a practice is the essence of this inner path of Raghunuga Bhakti, of spontaneous love. So until we've awakened to that relationship, also we advance by serving the devotees. And once we awaken to that relationship, we particularly advance by meditating on and serving those devotees who are in our particular mood. So Raghunath Das Goswami is in the mood. Anyone know what Raghunath Das Goswami's eternal mood is? As a Manjari of Srimati Radharani. So that's his mood, as Rati Manjari. So he's going to be speaking Manashiksha for his mood. And he's going to tell us, he's talking to his mind, whom his mind should meditate and worship upon. So what he's saying is going to apply to some extent to every soul who becomes enlightened, but also each soul is going to have their own particular persons that they worship. You follow? So if someone has parental love for Krishna, they're mostly going to be worshiping who? Mother Yasoda, or Mother Rohini, or Nanda Maharaj, or maybe Upananda. You follow? That makes sense to everyone? If someone awakens to being a cowherd boy, they're going to mostly be meditating on Subal, Sridhar, Mutrala, etc. So, Raghunath Das Goswami is giving us his meditation here in this next verse we're about to read. And we should understand he's talking about who he's meditating on, and he's also talking about a general principle. At the same time, everyone's going to meditate on these top personalities. Okay, ready? Marisha Narda Dve Raja Vibhina Chandra Raja Vane Swarinta Narda Dve Tara Tula Saki Dve Tula Litam Vishaka Chishali Vitara Nagur Dve Priya Saro Girindra Tapreksha Lavitara Dida Dve Smaramana. Everyone, oh mine, meditate on Krishna, the moon, the Vrindavan forest, as the Lord of my leader, Sri Radhika. Meditate on Sri Radhika as his most dear object of love. Meditate on Sri Lalita as her incomparable friend. Meditate on Sri Vishaka as the foremost guru distributing the teachings of love. And meditate on Radhakund and Govardhan as givers of the sight and love of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. So here we sing Krishna, Radha, Lalita, and Vishaka. This is from a description in Yananda Vrindavan Champana. As the objects of meditation and love. So how do you meditate on Krishna? Raghunath Das Goswami is meditating on Krishna as the moon of the Vrindavan forest and the Lord of Radha, his leader. So because Raghunath Das Goswami's affection is mostly for Radha, he's meditating on Krishna as Radha's Lord. Radha is his leader and Krishna is the Lord of Radha. That's his particular mood. Again, different devotees with different moods are going to be meditating a little differently. This is how he's meditating. Radha is serving Krishna. He is her Lord. And to meditate on Radha as Krishna's most dear object of love, as Krishna's servant, Radha. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, is quoting many prayers. Prayers to Krishna, prayers to Radha, to Lalita, to Vishakha, to Radhika, and to Govinda. And he says, Devi Radhika, this servant of yours has fallen immensely into the depths of various oceans of distress. Through the amazing boat of your strong mercy, kindly rescue the servant and make her attain the liberating shore of your lotus feet. And then Raghunath Das Goswami said we should meditate on Vishakha as the guru. So here we have Vishakha teaching the gopis how to decorate with flowers. This is the art, this verse we have the black and white drawings art done by Shamapriya, Devi Dasi, who lives here in New York. We had about 7 different artists with black and white pictures. She's the one who did it for this verse. And Vishakha instructs Radharani in how to serve Krishna. And in his incarnation of Ramananda Roy, Ramananda Roy is an incarnation of Vishakha, who is teaching Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna in Radha's womb, how to love Krishna. So in that way, Vishakha is also the teacher. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes some verses that Vishakha manifests as the river Jamuna. And here we see Jamuna with her brother Yamaraj on the lap of their father Suryadev. And Bhaktivinoda has some nice prayers to the Jamuna. He says, May Sri Jamuna Devi, the daughter of the lotus-friendly sun god, always purify me. She saves one from entering the abode of her brother Yamaraja, who punishes the sinful after death. And here's the Jamuna River. By seeing the Jamuna, by bathing in the Jamuna, one worships Vishakha. And Raghunath Das Goswami says to meditate on Lalita as Radha's incomparable friend and confidant. So even though we go back to verse 1, one pointed to Radha Krishna, but one pointed to Radha Krishna includes everyone in relationship to him. With Krishna as the center, and yet everyone, you're talking about your child, everyone. When you love Krishna, if you love Krishna, you love everyone that Krishna loves. Right? If you're not narrowing your focus, you're broadening your focus. And there's Lalita as Radha's very intimate confidant. And here's a nice description of Mother Yasoda, who has so much love for Lalita. And Radha and Vishakha are very happy at Mother Yasoda's love for Lalita. And Lalita is always instructing Radharani what to do, how to please Krishna, how to deal with Krishna. And this is a nice description from Ananda in Vrindavan Jampu. Sri Lalita Devi is extremely expert due to her excellent qualities, such as her dancing for Radha and Krishna and their friends. And Raghunath Das Goswami says we should meditate on Radha Kund, that Radha Kund will give us the sight of the divine couple and the love for Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Remember back in verse 1, Raghunath Das Goswami taught us to have love for all the places in Vrindavan. Yes? All the holy places. We can make a holy place in our home and have great love for the holy places. This is also a holy place. But now that one is really specifically awakening to one's eternal relationship, one is especially going to have love for those places that are in connection with one's personal relationship. So as a Manjari follower of Srimati Radharani, especially Raghunath Das Goswami is going to be attached to Radha Kund. We can understand, say, Mother Yasoda and Ananda Maharaj, they're not going to have the same relationship with Radha. Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah. And here's Radha Kund in Shambhala. And Govardhan, as the giver of sight and love for Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Well, Govardhan, it relates to everyone in Vrindavan. No matter what your relationship is with Krishna and Vrindavan, you have a relationship with Govardhan. And we find this theme of Govardhan running all through Manushiksha. Krishna is so often referred to as Giridhari in Manushiksha. Raghunathdas has a strong attachment for Giridhari. Okay, now after saying we should be meditating on Krishna, Radha, Lalita, Vishakha, Radhakan, and Govardhan, specifically now Raghunathdas Goswami is meditating on Radharani, who is his leader, and who is the personification of the pleasure potency and the compassionate potency of the Lord. Yes. So this verse is specifically glorifying Radharani, so we can chant this together. Ratim gori leya ta pitrindara kiranai sachi lakshmi sachya parita vati so bhagya balanai vasis karai chandra vali muka navina rajasati shipacha radhya tam hai jaita radhyam vajamana. O mind, offer your worship unto Sri Radhika, the beloved of Lord Hari. She outshines Rati, the wife of Kamadev, Gauri, the wife of Lord Shiva, and Leela, the potency of Lord Vishnu, by the effulgence of her beauty. She defeats Sachi, the wife of Indra, Lakshmi, and Satya, Krishna's wife, by the waves of her good fortune. She defeats the pride of the newly married gopis of Raja, headed by Chandravali, through her power to control Krishna. So who is this Radharani? Actually, Radha and Krishna are one in their identity. They separate themselves eternally for the sake of pleasure and pastimes. The Lord enjoys eternally with the bliss of his own potency, which is called his Ladini potency. She's identical with Lord Krishna because she embodies the mellows of love. She's his internal energy that gives him pleasure and nourishes all the devotees. You know, there's some controversy in the world, is God male or female? Well, we say he's both. Radha Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And here is Radharani outshining Rati, Gauri, Leela, and Sachi. All the demigods, all the other goddesses are offering respects to her. As Bhaktivinoda says in his commentary, she is the moonlight of bliss for the white lotuses. He also quotes a prayer, O Radhika, you are as fair as fresh Gorachana, a bright yellow color, and have garments as splendid as a blue lotus. Your braids that are decorated with jewels and flowers give the appearance of a serpent's foot. So, of course, when Rupa Goswami first wrote this, Sanatana Goswami objected. How can you compare Radharani's braid to a serpent? And then Sanatana Goswami saw some young girls playing nearby, and he thought a snake was climbing up one of their... There's a snake! And the girls turned around and laughed, and he saw it was the braid, and then they disappeared. And then he went to Rupa and said, you're right. Bhaktivinoda says that Radharani is the beloved of her father, Vrishabhanu. And she defeats the pride of the newly married gopis through her power to control Krishna. So our painting for this verse is of the eight principal gopis, not Radharani's eight astasakis, but the eight principal gopis. And this is from a description in the Bhagavatam of Krishna's return to Rasleela. This is the first time that this particular part of the Leela has been illustrated. So this is adhering to exactly the verses in the Bhagavatam, the commentary of the Acharyas, the description of Ananda Vrindavan Tampu and Gopal Champu. In our book, we quote all of these sections of this painting. And so why is Radharani angry with Krishna here? He left Rasleela. So he comes back, She doesn't just say, oh, I'm glad you're back. She says, why did you leave? You shouldn't have left us. And Radharani and her associates are there, and Krishna's left, and they're waiting for Krishna to come to them because their mood is Krishna's mind. So they're not just going to walk to him. They're waiting for Krishna to come to them. That is their mood. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur reminds us that in worshipping Radha, we always have to go through the devotees. So he says in the purport, climb in the boat of the Sakya's mercy and sail into the ocean of love, where you will find the lotus feet of the daughter of Vishwamani, Radha. So although in this verse, Raghunathas Goswami is just glorifying Radha, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur reminds us how in the other verses, he's always emphasizing that we have to go through the devotees and be the servant of the servant. Okay. All together? Saman Shri Rupena Smaravilla Sarvaha Girvritur Raje Sakshat Seva Lavana Vinaye Tagana Yujo Tarikya Ganam Shravana Nati Pancham Ritamiyam Daya Michako Vardana Manudinam Tvamba Jamanam. Oh my, you should every day drink the five nectars, worship, glories, meditation, listening to divine pastimes and offering obeisances, and worship Govardhana according to the rules. In this way, follow the instructions of Sri Rupa and obtain direct service of Sri Radha Giridhari, who are captivated by the god of amorous love in the company of their associates in Raja. So, as I mentioned yesterday, there have been some other translations of Manashiksha. The main one that you'll find in this time is really more of a summary study. And we spent all together well over 2 years just working on the translations with our expert translators. And it was interesting in this verse, where to put in Vraja. So, did Raghunathas Goswami intend that one should engage in these five nectars of worship in Vraja? Or did he say that by doing these five nectars of worship, you would attain to Vraja? So, after much going back and forth and looking at all the comments, we finally stuck with this translation, but it could be understood the other way as well. So, the five nectars. So you remember we got that glowing nectar to drink, right? You all remember that? Once we had the pure, humble heart, and the love of God was not just all around us, but in us. But it was not differentiated. It wasn't personal, so now it's becoming more personal. Five nectars. And these five nectars are worship, glories, meditation, listening to divine pastimes, and offering obeisances. Now, Raghunathas Goswami in this verse says, to do these five nectars and to worship Govardhana according to the rules. And it's also a little ambiguous. Are these five nectars to be done to Radha Krishna and then worship Govardhana according to the rules, or does one also do these five nectars for Govardhana? So we looked at it both ways. Now remember, this is at the point of the awakening of the soul. Now, this can certainly be done by the very beginning person in Vaidhisadhana Bhakti. In fact, everything here in Manashiksha can be done by the beginning person in Vaidhisadhana Bhakti. But Raghunathas Goswami here is specifically referring to one who's now attained perfection and who's doing these activities in their eternal form. So, to congregationally chant the glories of the Lord. So, here we see devotees chanting at Govardhana. To offer sasthanga prana, the eightfold obeisances before the deity, or as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, any place that awakens our remembrance of the Lord. To meditate on the holy names, divine pastimes, the form of the Lord. To taste the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of devotees. So these are things done at every stage, yes? These are things done by someone who walks in the door, and these are things done by the person who's now filled with the glowing nectar of love and meditating on their eternal form. Therefore, this is the inner path. It looks just like Vaidhi Bhakti, yes? It's the inner path. That one is coming to self-realization without going through those external things that were described in the Ajra. And when this is bathing Govardhan with the five nectars, of course, more symbolically bathing Govardhan with the five nectars, although we've illustrated it literally. These five nectars of worship, obeisances, hearing, and so forth are the nectars with which we're bathing Govardhan. And following the rules, worship Govardhan. So, of course, Raghunathas Goswami received a Govardhan Shila from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Most of Raghunathas Goswami's dealings with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were through Swami Damodar. But when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back from Vrindavan, and he got a Govardhan Shila and Gunjamala, and he would worship this Govardhan Shila, and he would touch it to his head and to his eyes, and cried on this Govardhan Shiva. And then he gave the Govardhan Shiva and the Gunjamala to Raghunathas Goswami. And Raghunathas Goswami can understand that by receiving the Shiva that he was getting residence at Govardhan, and by receiving the Gunjamala, he now had the shelter of Srimati Radharani. And then, of course, after Lord Chaitanya's departure, Raghunathas Goswami lived at Radhakund, which is part of Govardhan. So why Govardhan? There, Krishna is always surrounded by his friends like Sridhar and Subal, and Shivati Radharani is always surrounded by her friends like Lalita and Vishakha. Yeah? Radharani says, of all the devotees, Govardhan Hill is the best. All my friends. This hill supplies Krishna and Balaram along with their cows and cowherd friends with all kinds of necessities, such as water for drinking, fragrant, cool water from the Govardhan waterfalls, which Krishna and Balaram drink and use to wash their feet and mouths. Beverages such as honey, mango juice, and pila juice. Fragrant, soft grasses for feeding the transcendental herds of cows. Caves where Krishna and Balaram and their friends play, sit, and lie down. The caves give pleasure when the weather is too hot or too cold or when it's raining. Govardhan has soft roots for eating. Jewels for ornamenting the bodies of Krishna and his friends. Flat places for sitting. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. Govardhan Hill shows us how to offer pure devotional service to Krishna, so devotees pray, O Govardhan, please let me live near you. Then again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary again emphasizes that in order to approach Radha Krishna, in order to approach the Supreme Destination, one always serves the servants of the servants. So writing about those specifically who are the attendants of Radharani, he says, first in the stage of perfection, you'll attain service to the Lord from a distance. Then gradually serving under the guidance of the assistants from a distance, you'll get service that will bring you a little closer to Radha and Krishna's friends. And then gradually you'll just receive the direct service of the divine couple. And in whatever stage of devotion one is in, one should always continue to do things like mark the body with tilak and drink the chana and the tilak. Now we come to the final benedictory verse, which tells us what we've been trying to do all along. Okay? Mana shikshavadi kada sakavara meta madaraya gira gaya kuchja samagi gata sarvataya tiya sayukta shri rupa nugai hava Becoming a follower of Sri Rupa and his companions, one with a sweet voice loudly recites these 11 supreme verses which give instruction to the mind and strives to understand all of their meanings completely, obtains the incomparable jewel of worshiping Sri Sri Radha Krishna in the forest of Gokul. And again, this was Are you supposed to sing them in Gokula, or do you get to Gokula? That was a little ambiguous. It took some time. And here we have the last verse of Manashesha written on the kind of leaf books that Raghavat Das Goswami wrote. Right? And then we have the jewels of the love for Radha Krishna. So Krishna likes to wear earrings that are like sharks or dolphins or makaras. So this is not his earrings. It was interesting with this painting, with all the other paintings, the artist, Ganesha Prabhu from Italy, he would first send me a sketch, and then we'd go back and forth and talk about the sketch, and then he'd send the final painting. This one he just sent me the final painting. He said, I'm sorry, I just started and that's what came out of my brush. It's our benedictory verse. So, following Sri Rupa and his associates. So, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, we understood this to mean Rupa in his mood of Rupa Goswami. Sometimes it's translated as Rupa Manjari, but we're taking Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary in this regard, who received extensive instructions from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And from the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami performed his own bhajan and gave us so many books of instructions. And Raghunath Das Goswami, who lived at the end of Radhakund after the disappearance of the Lord, where he wrote this Manashiksha. And Raghunath Das Goswami could mean one should do all this in Vraja, one should sing these songs in Vraja, or he could mean by singing the songs you go to Vraja. Again, it's a little ambiguous. And there in Vraja, Krishna is with all of his friends. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has many verses in his commentary to this verse glorifying the land of Vrindavan, and he specifically says that Radharani has a pride of the land of Vrindavan, where she says, this forest is mine. And he says, may that Vrindavan forest be my shelter. And this is Radharani's mood, that Vrindavan, she says, is mine. You know, we talk about, the Beatles had that song, I, Me, Me, Mine. We talk about we should give up this aham mameti, I am mine. But we replace it with something spiritual. I am Krishna's and Krishna's. So this is the end of our discussion on the splendid instructions to the mind with Raghunath Das Goswami, with commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And of course, without Srila Prabhupada, who brought us the instructions of the Goswamis, we wouldn't even know about this literature, what to be able to discuss it. And we've also included in our book the commentaries of contemporary devotees like Bhaktivinoda Gyanaswami, Jayadvaita Swami, Satchidananda Maharaj, and Sridharam Maharaj. And I'm sorry again that they're all sold out, and we hope that very soon we can get them on Amazon. We're just doing the final negotiations. So we have just a few minutes if anybody has any further questions or comments or criticisms, discussions, corrections. Yes?
In general, it's like how to control all the emotions, negative emotions, I think, given a daily activity. You know, if you have to be like in awareness, you have to watch, but most of the time we'll be in mindless state.
Mm. How do we control all of our negative emotions throughout the day? Because mostly we're just like in a mindless state, right?
Here it's easy, right?
And then you go out of the room. So our real key for that is to use our emotions for Krishna. Like we had one gentleman this morning asking about Dhyana Yoga, Kundalini Yoga. You know, the Karma Yogis, the Gyan Yogis, the Dhyana Yogis, they're trying to stop all that. They're trying to stop all their emotions and just be equipoised. And Krishna talks a lot about being equipoised in the Bhagavad Gita. It's all in the Bhagavad Gita. Matras Parshas Tukante Asitas Nasukadipada Agamapayana Chestanta Tikshasubharata. The whole description of the self-realized soul, the end of the second chapter, the 14th chapter. One who does not hate attachment, illumination, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them to disappear, knowing that the modes alone are active. You know, the whole sixth chapter, friends, enemies, the neutral with an equal eye, pebbles, stone, and gold equally. One who sees the end of the 12th chapter, 13 through 20. And one who's equal in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, friends, enemies, honor, dishonor, fame, infamy. And you just kind of get the feeling that Krishna's talking about someone like this. Hi. I'm blissful all the time. You know, but that's okay, you know, for a little while, I suppose, if you're really suffering in the waves of material energy. Kind of like going to the beach and just lying in the ocean. Ah, you don't have to think about my bills and my kid. But bhakti is not like that. So in karma yoga, gyan yoga, and dhyan yoga, they take all these material emotions and they try to make them zero, so you just have this kind of equipoise plane. But we want the spiritual emotions. I mean, you read about the residents of Vrindavan, they're really emotional. They're much more emotional than anybody I've ever met on this planet. I mean, they're really, really emotional. And they don't just have the positive emotions. When Krishna's in the coils of Kaliya, they're scared. Like we said, when Krishna returns to the Rasa dance, Radharani's angry. Eh? They have the full range of emotions. I mean, in fact, it's said like on the higher planets, they have more colors than we have. They have more tastes than we have, more smells than we have. Don't you think they have more emotions too? So what to speak of the spiritual world? How many emotions do they have? So many. So what we want to do is we want to replace the material emotions with spiritual emotions. So our process is we gradually start getting spiritual emotions, and proportionally, as we get spiritual emotions, our material emotions will decrease. And when we get to about here, we're fixed, and we're pretty much in sattva. And then it goes like this. So that's our process. So how do you develop spiritual emotions? Therefore, Manasiksha starts with have attachment. Get attached to Krishna emotionally. Get attached to the holy places. Get attached to your guru. Get attached to the holy name. Have rati. Have affection. Care. How are you going to do that? Hear about them. Chant about them. Be with other people who are attached to them. And be careful, especially about what we talk and hear about. You know, the prostitute of mundane talks. Looks like some attractive woman who wants to love you, but actually she's just after your wallet. She doesn't care about you. So don't go to that. Don't go to the tigress, a nice kitty cat of liberation who's just going to eat you. So be absorbed in the talks of Krishna. Be absorbed in the association of devotees. All right, but we still have all this stuff here. You know, we're working on it, but it's still there. What are you going to do with it? So what many people find very helpful, this is something I got to some extent from Virgin people. Like he was saying, whenever we go, if only, we say, oh, if only I loved Krishna, you know, if only my stomach didn't hurt, if only I had enough money in the bank, if only I had a child, if only I didn't have a child, or whatever. Everybody's lamenting about this or that. Hankering and lamenting, sojati and kanchati. Oh, if only, then switch it. As soon as the mind says, if only my wife was nice to me, or if only I had a wife, or if only I didn't have a wife, or if only I had this job, or if only I could retire from my job, if only I loved Krishna, substitute. And when the emotions come, you think, if only I could feel this intensely for Krishna. Great sadness comes, and we're devastated with sadness. Oh, how sad I'm feeling right now. If only I had that intensity of love for Krishna that I right now have. How angry I am right now. They told me I was going to get those papers Tuesday morning, and I have a meeting in an hour, and they're still not there, and I'm going to go in front of my lost boss and look like a fool because the papers didn't arrive on time, and if I go and I tell them it was UPS's fault, he's not going to listen to me. Ah! Krishna, if only I cared about you as much as I cared about impressing my boss. If only I cared about you with the intensity that I'm afraid about my job, with the intensity that I'm angry at this. If only I had that much love for you. And if you do that, there's an instant change. All of a sudden you remember, oh, this emotion is for Krishna. It's for Krishna, all my emotions, so-called negative, so-called positive. Yam krodha kama sahaja pranayati bitti vatsalya moha guru vasevi babai samchin chitasum sadhisin tanam aparete govindamani purusham tam maham bhajami. Any strong emotional attachment to Krishna, even if it's anger, that we get connected with Krishna. So when those emotions come, you know, you can do some big psychoanalysis. Well, let's see, I'm actually angry because I'm afraid of this. And that's okay. But better just, Krishna, I wish I loved you this much. I wish I cared this much. And you'll find an instant switch. But then we'll remember that the things that we're getting so joyful or excited or whatever, or angry or sad or fearful or disgusted with in the world are really not worth it. Money comes and goes, relationships come and go, jobs come and go, politicians come and go, wars come and go, bodies come and go, lifetimes come and go. You know, if someone told me what I was so upset about in a previous life, I wouldn't even care anymore. Even in this life, isn't it? Right? Sometimes we can remember, I had a really big argument with somebody, but what was I arguing about? You ever had that happen? You remember that the argument happened, but you can't remember what you were arguing about? And that's even in this life. That's so important. But we are meant to be emotional creatures. Without emotion, there's no life. Even people who try to go through life very much without emotion, just facts. They have to have some time of their emotional, football game or something. I've seen people watching a football game, they're yelling at the television. You ever seen it? Jump out of their seat. So because we that's natural for us to express strong emotion. So societies have to create venues where people are allowed to be emotional. That's why they have all this media and the sports games and political rallies. So people can get emotional. Without that, there's no life. Otherwise, we're just a table. You know, a table doesn't get very emotional. So if we want to be equipoised to the material emotions, we want to be awake to the spiritual emotions. When we're awake to the spiritual emotions, then the material emotions will genuinely seem to us as foolish shadows. You know, once you eat that fresh mango juice from the mango picked out of the tree in your backyard, you will not want to buy the mango juicy drink with 2% mango flavor. Right? So our cure is get the real thing. In Manushiksha, it was always get the real thing, right? Get rid of the prostitute and the tigress, get the jewel. And get rid of the donkey ear and get the ocean. It was always get the real thing, get the real thing. Is that all right? If you have time for one more, anybody else? So thank you very much. Raghunath Das Goswami ki. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. Guru Prabhupada ki.
Urmila Mataji ki.
So this is the beginning. I haven't really done something like this before, doing like a book tour. So this is just my first stop. So this is the first time I presented this. So I'm begging all of your blessings that as we travel around the world, that I can actually realize this, that it can become part of me and that it can get better and better. So please, please, please give me your blessings and good wishes. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, I was really pushed to do that by a friend of mine. I wasn't.
There are lectures.
Oh.
And I got. Do you have time for a quick little story?
Yes.
The very first time I ever went to Vedanta was in Berkeley, and I was doing a paper on the Rig Veda, and the professor said, well, go to the Vedanta temple and you'll meet all these professors and people who are registered in the Vedic literature. So I went there.